hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Red Leg Talk. I am Nathan Wintersign with your host, Chris Wright. How you doing, Chris?
Nate, my guy. I'm doing great. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great.
Outstanding, man. Did you have a good weekend? How's the family?
Good. Yeah, we had a pretty good weekend. We actually went to a little like family farm thing and let the kid run around a little bit and got some photos taken and stuff and had a pretty good time.
Nice. Good deal, man. Good deal. Always love it when the little ones get out, man. That's lots of fun. I miss those days. My kid's all grown up now. He's an adult.
Yeah, man. I mean, he's just a little guy running around here at a year and a half. So, yeah, he had fun. We had a wedding also, so he got to run around at a wedding and show off for all the girls.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Good times indeed.
Well, man, what all has been going on up there around the shop and stuff?
Man, busy week. So, burnout both ends. I started to get, I managed to find some material. So I've got the acrylics under control, and next thing you know, I'm getting flooded with orders for corn cutters. So I had to stop that and start spinning some Osage orange up, some yellow hedge. So, and I got them curing right now. So, but, I will tell everyone if you're planning, for that gift for Christmas, materials are tough. They're tough for everyone to find. So place those orders early. Give us plenty of time to be able to fulfill that Christmas wish list for you.
Yeah, I actually know one of the guys I hunt with down here. Like, he was at the wedding with me, and he's like, "Man, I ordered a corn cutter the other day," and I was like, "Awesome, man!" So that'll be one of your orders.
Yeah, actually, his was one of 14 that came in on me. So, but yeah. In probably about 2 days, it will be in the mail and heading on down to him. So he's going to be able to hammer on that by hopefully next weekend.
Awesome. He's probably going to listen to this and be excited about that.
Yeah. So I'll tune it up and send him a text or a little sound file just to get him excited.
Yeah, man, that sounds good. So you guys had opening weekend in Ohio. We're out right now. So how did that go for you guys?
Oh, you know, I wish I had some awesome story, you know, where we were just covered up with birds and beating them off with tennis rackets, but, did something a little different. Normally I go hit a creek. I got a couple little creeks. But this time I went and hunted public. We actually drew a blind. So, and spent a couple days in the summer setting that blind. We actually did some blind location studies and figured out what would be best for the entire season, not just one season or the other. So we felt good about the location. The blind looks gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. So, yeah, we finished 13 hours of hunting with 5 birds, 4 big fat Drake mallards and a gadwall. And on top of that, I broke my gun.
Your gun.
The gun I literally just got back from a gunsmith, put a beautiful sear coat on it. So, and it's my fault. You know, I got used to shooting the Franke, especially for, sporting clays and clay pigeons. So didn't even bother pulling it out. So, and I, for whatever reason, decided to take her out. And, yeah, noticed I was having some trouble keeping shells in the magazine. And when I went bang, the hammer never went back down. So, but, you know, we had some wins. My good buddy Kane came out. He's got a young pup named Crush. So we had her out Sunday, and she did phenomenal. Phenomenal. She's only about 10, 11 months old. So took direction well, took being in the water well. It was the first time in a boat ride. So she did well. And then the young lady that actually won the blind, who's part of our crew, her name's Kate. She got her first ever Drake mallard, a big old fat boy too. So a couple big wins, man. So it was good. You know, the numbers weren't quite there, but it was good, brother.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. That's, kind of sounds like you had a West Virginia opening, except you didn't just shoot wood ducks. So that's awesome. You got on to some mallards.
So, what are you planning on for opening day, Nate?
We're going to try to go hunt a creek that we got, and I don't know how it's going to go. We'll just see how it goes. But, I mean, right now we're kind of – I thought we got some birds, but I don't think we got as many as I thought we did. We found some on the little public fishing pond that showed up one day. But, man, we scouted there a day and just didn't find what we thought was there. I mean, we seen a couple of mallards. Didn't maybe find some – teal laying it up in a creek, but that was kind of a surprise that we actually found them. So, I mean, that was the good news that we found some teal are still around, because I'd like to shoot a teal, but right now, I mean, doesn't look good, but we got 2 weeks. So we hopefully get some birds by then.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We're seeing some color. We're seeing some birds. I mean, not tons. A little in northern Ohio, starting to see some birds. I talked to my good buddy Matt. He says he actually lost some birds, but they're starting to see fresh birds in different areas. So I think we might be seeing a trickle or just kind of like birds starting to compile, you know, getting pushed off of small creeks and ponds and the housing development ponds. And they're kind of starting to get into the bigger flocks, the bigger groups. So it's easier to find them. So, I mean, it's 60 degrees during the day and 40 degrees at night. So, but we've had some north blows and we've had some pretty crappy weather up in Canada. So, you know, a couple birds could have pushed through. I know they're starting to see speckled bellies down south.
Yeah, I did see a video from Texas today. They're running some birds off some peanuts. And I've actually had two friends go to North Dakota, South Dakota. It might have been both in North Dakota. I don't know. And the one, he was there a week ago, 2 weeks ago. He had a pretty good trip. I mean, they shot a ton of widgeons and some teal and stuff. And then they got into a few mallards the last day there. I mean, shot one big fatty. I mean, he looked huge. And then a guy I work with, actually the VP of my company, he just got back from out there, I think Saturday, and they had a heck of a trip. I mean, I think they shot a limit of ducks. I mean, they were shooting 45 ducks a day. So I know they go right up near the border. So hopefully that means there's some birds finally pushing down across that border out there.
Yeah, I talked to Danny Witherspoon up in Canada. He's actually up there this year. And a ton of snows, ton of cranes. The ducks had not quite pushed in yet. But he was anticipating, a day or two before the ducks really start coming in. But he was thinking that Quill Lakes was holding probably close to 1 million snows.
Dang, that's a lot right now.
Yeah. Hey, Nate, want to hear something great?
What's that?
I got that giant turkey bird back from the taxidermist.
Nah, someone told me you got it back. I seen a picture. A picture floated around. Someone down here shared a picture with me of it. Man, that thing looks humongous. I don't think the photo you took with it does it justice.
No. 27 pounds, 8 ounces. So he's a behemoth. Real tall. He was a skinny bird, but he was tall. I really wish I got him in a cackler, but I got to be honest, Ernie Wallace, the Central Flyway Taxidermy, did a phenomenal job with him. So, but yeah, he called me up and said, brother, I got it done. I need the room. So, and I took Douglas over there to pick it up. And yeah, he was speechless. And he's got quite a few big birds on his wall too. So I got a wall space issue. So he's sitting in the shop right now. I got to move some stuff around in the house to get him back in the house.
I was going to say, he's going to take up all the room in the shop if you don't watch.
I got to be honest, I've already whacked my head twice on him. So, but big old double beard, you know, just clean, just beautiful bird. Good spurs, tall, you know, head looks absolutely gorgeous. That's one of Ernie's specialties, is that head. So he did a great job on it.
That's awesome, man. So, Chris, we're sitting here, we're talking, but we got somebody on hold. Why don't you tell us about who we got on hold right now?
God, Mike Wilcox, without a doubt, is possibly one of the best bass fishermen, tournament fishermen I've come across. So, and I've got quite a few buddies that run the circuit, and Mikey's one of those guys that will take time to work with you, you know, and I've always considered myself a pretty good fisherman, and I've spent some quality time with Kyle and Nick and Mikey, and I realize, you know, I got a lot to learn. And Mikey's just a great dude. He is a guru when it comes to smallmouths and bass fishing. Him and I have spent, I can't even say hours, I'm going to say days, months, talking about bass fishing. And him and I have had that heart to heart that if we had to choose one, he has said straight out, it'll be bass fishing forever. So I'll choose waterfowling, but man, that bass fishing is a close second. So, but he's going to take time, kind of take us through, you know, Ohio. We'll talk about the circuit a little bit. He's going to talk about some tactics to use in the streams and creeks, to the lakes, to the rivers, even Lake Erie, because they're all subtly different. You know, maybe some tackle guys need to bring in and then start using. So, but Mikey's a great dude, super excitable. And it bass fishing oozes out of him, Nate. That's the only way I can describe him. Oozes out of him.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about this. I mean, I've just like got into bass fishing, as I talked about on my other podcast. And like, this is like, we fish smallmouth in West Virginia, and this is something I'm not very good at yet. So I'm going to be excited. I got a piece of paper here. I'm going to take some notes.
He's going to be the guy that points you in the right direction, brother.
Hey, Mike, How you doing there, man? We got you unmuted up now. We can hear you. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hey, Nate. Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me, you guys. My name is Mike Wilcox. I'm here from Lewisville, Ohio. We're just a small little farm town. The best way I could put it is right outside of Canton, Ohio, home of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So we're kind of just a little town in between the city of Alliance and the city of Canton. Grew up my whole life fishing for bass, hunting small game with my dad, my uncles, my cousins, my best buddies, and stuff like that. I'd like to say real quick, I am more than honored to be on KES Waterfowlers Pro Staff. Chris, a couple of years ago, asked me to be on his Pro Staff team, and I am more than honored to be on KES Waterfowlers Pro Staff. And I heard you guys, I heard Chris mention, people have asked me all the time, Mike, if you had to choose one, bass fishing or duck hunting, it'd be tough, but it'd be pretty fast to say bass fishing. There is no doubt about it. That is my love, is my passion. I love to chase ducks. I love to hunt wood ducks and chase geese down all winter long. But if I had to choose, it would be bass fishing, Nate. There's no doubt about it. So Chris was pretty spot on with that. So, but yeah, once again, you guys, thanks for having me. I'm really excited. Talk a little duck hunting, but I'm more excited to probably talk bass fishing, especially chasing them smallies around. So you guys got any questions or want to chat about whatever, just start firing away.
Yeah, I'll start out with one. How did your season go? Like, I did a little research today. I looked you up a little bit up on the internet, you know. I did a little surfing over there. Looks like you had a pretty good year. Chris told me you had a good year, but I did a little searching. You know, you can find everything on the Google now. So how did it go for you this year?
The season went pretty good, Nate. We took a few checks. I've been fishing with another really, really good friend of mine. Mick Maloney, he's up from around Lake Erie. He lives in Painesville. He's a police officer in East Lake. And I've been fishing a lot with him this year. And I also fish another series called the Lakes Trails. The one I fish with Mick is the X series. And then I fished one called the Lakes Trails with a guy named Dave Monner from here in my hometown, owner of Monner Excavating. I like to call him Uncle Dave. I've known him, gosh, I've been 14 years old, 15 years old. He truly is the one that really got me into the hardcore tournament angling bass fishing. Just kind of grew up, you know, fishing around with my dad and, you know, chasing around different fish like that. My dad's more of a, like, put on a worm, sit back and throw the line out there, grab him a Mountain Dew and a Butterfinger. That's pretty much how my dad is. I take him out fishing with me, Nate, you know, Chris, and first time I took him out, we, looked back and I said, Dad, you good? He said, I'm good. And as his feet kicked up on my motor, his line's out at the other end of the thing. I'm fishing a shoreline. He's out in the deep water and he's got the line out. He's got his feet up on my motor and a Butterfinger and a Mountain Dew. And I said, Dad, if you're bored, I can take you back to the ramp. He said, no. He said, you guys work too hard for that bass. He said, I'm going to sit here and relax and enjoy myself. So kind of how it went. But yeah, it was a good season, Nate, you know, back to your question. But I will say one thing. It's a very, very hard game we play, you guys. There's no doubt about it. You figure we're going up against 65 to 75, 80 boats any given tournament, and they pay 10. So, you know, there's a lot of really good anglers out there nowadays, a lot of young kids that can really use electronics and all that stuff. The game's really evolved to bass fishing, and it's just tough. You got to think if it's a 70-boat tournament, there's 60 of you going home with nothing. So I like to tell people, you know, it's a job that don't guarantee a paycheck, but when it's rewarding, it's sweet and it's a really good feeling. So for me to, you know, say, Nate, that we took some checks, me and Mick did win one tournament. Me and my uncle took a couple of checks, had a few big basses this year, got a nice plaque for that and a nice plaque for first place. And we just finished up our championship up at Chautauqua Lake. It's a beautiful Chautauqua Lake up in New York. And 10th place paid $1,000. So that wasn't too bad with first place being a $46,000 Ranger bass boat. One time in 2011, I was fortunate enough to win that boat. And then the year after that, 2012, I came in second. So we almost won that boat 2 years in a row. And I'll tell you guys, it's one of the greatest feelings you ever have in your life to win something like that, doing something that you love. So, but yeah, it was a pretty good season, Nate.
Yeah, man, that's awesome to hear you talk about that with your dad and stuff out there. My dad's kind of the same way, minus he would rather go catch a catfish than bass fish. He fished one tournament with
me. Absolutely.
And he told me the entire time, he's like, I'm no help for you. He goes, I'm just kind of here. He goes, you get me a minnow and a nightcrawler, I can show you how to catch a bass.
Right. That's the only downfall. People ask me all the time. They're like, well, would you just use it minnows? I said, well, that's one thing you guys about tournament angling. It's strictly all, no live bait. That's the rules. You can't have no live bait at all. Everything has to be artificial. So, yeah, a lot of people say, well, I catch big old bass using a bobber and a minnow. And I'm like, well, I'm sure you do, So, yeah, I can really relate to that, Nate. Like I said, my dad probably gave it a good hour. And that was the end of that. All the casting, all the maneuvering around, and he's just out there with a worm looking to catch catfish or walleye, so.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome there. So here, I've got a question I want to ask real quick before Chris starts pegging you about all kinds of tackle and stuff and try to get some secrets sure. out. What kind of boat do you use? Because I'm a big fan of a boat.
That's a good question, Nate. So between me and Mick and Dave, we have three bass boats. I have an older pro craft. It still runs great. I take care of things I have. I have a 150 horse motor on the back. My partner Mick and my partner Dave each have a Ranger. One's 19 foot and one's 21 foot. The 19 foot has a 225 Mercury on the back, and the 21 foot has a 250 horse Yamaha on the back. Both of those Rangers that we have, I like to joke around and tell everybody those are my boats as well. So these two guys are like uncle to me, but both of those boats are fully equipped to the tilt, Nate. And when I mean that, I mean, we have Garmin LiveScope up front for electronics paired with, Hummingbird 360. And in the console, we have the Hummingbird side images, all the 10 and 12 inch screens on them, full color with chips built into them, along with GPS built into them. In the back, along with the big motors, we have two power poles on each boat, and each one of the boat up front also has 112 pound thrust Minn Kota trolling motors on the front as well. So they're loaded down. But I like to tell people, Nate, the electronics don't catch the fish. You can have all that kind of stuff in the world, but if you don't know how to use the tools, you're just as good as I am with just regular electronics, So we really spend a lot of time trying to dial down those electronics, Googling different things on the internet. You can Google all kinds of ways to set them up, and we have them set up to where you can literally see bait fish on them. You can tell which direction trees are laying, rock piles are laying, all things of that nature. So yeah, they're pretty well fully decked out.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm actually looking at, it'll be a couple years down the road, but I'm looking at getting one of those Express X21s. That's kind of what I'd like to get. And you're right, electronics right. don't mean a thing. I mean, right now I'm fishing out of my dad's Sea Arc, and we got side imaging from Lowrance on it. And I mean, we still catch bass out of it. I mean, you just got to go fish. You got to go find the structure, go fish for them. Yeah, it helps seeing them.
Absolutely.
That's one thing about it. Chris, what all kinds of questions do you got for him? Because I know you sent me one over you wanted to ask him.
I know, and I've learned a ton from him. So I'm going to put him on a spot. I'm going to go, Mikey, what's your favorite go-to lure or setup that is a must-have for any smallmouth or largemouth angler out there? What's your number one and number two, buddy?
Well, Chris, I'll start off with the largemouth. I love largemouth as much as I do smallmouth, but I am 100% a smallmouth guy. I've been fishing bass tournaments over 20 years, and a lot of us all know each other. And if you talk to any other anglers I competed against, they would 100% say, well, Mike Wilcox is a smallmouth guy. That's all there is to it. I've chased him down. I've lost a lot of money chasing down smallmouth, which we can get into that here in a little bit, but they're a different breed. As far as largemouth goes, it just kind of depends on the time of the year. If you're starting out in early spring, something fast moving. They're coming off that cold. They're coming off being a little lethargic. They're ready to eat. They're ready to get ready to set themselves up to spawn. We call that the pre-spawn. Spinner baits, nice half-ounce spinner bait. If the water's real muddy, you want to get a Colorado blade on there. But I firmly believe in willow blades. A lot of guys want to put trailer hooks on your spinner baits. That's great. We like to put trailers on them, period. Little swim baits, little curly tail grubs, things of that nature. A rattle trap, that's a great, great, you know, early spring bait, as well as a chatterbait. And with them chatterbaits, you know, nice half ounce, quarter ounce, something to want to stay down there. Put a nice trailer on that as well. Nice Kytex swim bait, something of that nature, something to get a little movement going. You know, when you're using those baits early in the, you know, early in the spring like that, Chris, you want to, you know, kind of mess them, try to find that. Finding that depth is the key, you guys. Once you find the depth, you can find fish and you can keep catching fish. The main thing us bass guys do, we go out, we start, we all run to our spots that usually hold them, all the lakes we fish, but finding that depth is key. When you find that depth, you stay in that couple feet depth range and you just, you plug away and you cover water in the spring. And I mean, you put that trolling motor down, you set that sucker on medium to high and you go and you go and you go and just cast and cast. But that's what I would say for the largemouth early spring when they start to get set up after the spawn. You know, in the spawn, it's tough. Them fish are on their bed. You can kind of bed fish them. I'm not the best at bed fishing. It's a knack. You got to have the clear water. It's just a thing that some of these guys are really good at. I can do it. It's just not my forte. But when they get done out of that spawn and they want to get themselves in them weeds and get offshore and get in that post spawn, that's when it gets good, you guys, when summer starts to hit. And that's when I believe in Texas rigs with a creature bait, something you can punch down through those weeds, get in them weeds, you know, find that depth, find them good, healthy weeds. When you're pre-fishing around, you know, you want to throw in there, get a couple nice bites. But if it's a few days before the tournament, you get them bites, you want to bury that hook and shake them fish off. You know, I don't know if you guys know this, but when you set the hook on a fish, it takes about 7 to 8 days for that fish to want to bite again. I tell people time and time again, they're like, oh, man, day before the tournament, I was catching big largemouth, and they just wouldn't bite. I said, well, you know, you can't set the hook on them the day before like that. They'll never bite again. You wasted it, you know. And then towards the end of the year, Chris, you just want to revert back to the same difference as I said for spring, those fast-moving baits. You know, find them setting up on rock piles. You know, they're going to rush in shallow, start feeding, get ready to set up for the fall, you know. So, but I'd say the main go-to for any kind of largemouth, you get a nice Texas rig with a creature bait on it, get you a spinner bait, chatter bait, something of that nature, and that's a good way to, you know, start out for largemouth. Go-to for smallmouth, Chris, you know as well as I do, I talk about the Netty rig until I'm blue in the face. It's a sweet setup. It's a sweet rig. It's great. Smallmouth love jigs. Smallmouth love tubes. The go-to for any smallmouth guy, whether you're fishing Lake Erie, Chautauqua, anything of that nature, is 100% a drop shot. There's no doubt about it. Some kind of a straight tail, something that's going to stick straight out, a little minnow type bait. But a drop shot is definitely the key for smallmouth. That is probably their number one favorite bait to eat. There's no doubt about it.
Nate, you taking notes?
Oh, yeah. I've wrote down so much that it's kind of ridiculous over here. I'm actually covering myself up.
Yeah, because Mikey and Mick gave me a master's degree in using drop shots and Ned rigs on Lake Erie last May.
Hey, so, I learned about that Ned rig, and trust me, that sucker will catch you a couple bass.
Oh, brother.
I used one in a creek with Kyle. Him and I snuck out for a creek fish in late spring. And we had an absolute blast, and that's all we threw. We hit one hole, and I'll bet you we ended up catching close to 30 fish.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, he touched on it a little bit. He said he's lost a lot of money chasing them smallmouth, and I'll tell you one thing. Like I said on my other podcast, my wife has not listened to one of these, and hopefully she doesn't. But it takes some money. Like I started out with no equipment this year. I had like one pole. And we decided we was going to go fish some local tournaments. And like you said, I mean, it doesn't take long for those. You get 15 guys coming to a tournament. There's a good chance 12 of them are real fishermen. They're good guys. Like, they can go out there and they can catch them.
Yep.
And I mean, those guys, I mean, when they're bringing back, you know, 3-pound smallmouth, two or three of them bring back a 3-pound smallmouth, it's tough to win when you're not really in the right area, if you ain't got it figured out yet.
Yeah, that's really true, Nate. You know, a lot of guys, I guess I should touch on the reason why I'm such a smallmouth guy. There's three main reasons why I'm a smallmouth guy. One, there's no better fish pound for pound in the lake to catch. They dive, they dig, they jump, they flip, they dive back down again. They don't give up, and it's the funnest fish in the whole entire world to catch, I swear. But the other thing with smallmouth, you know, Nate, 9 times out of 10, when you catch one, there'll be 15, 20, maybe 30 of them together, and it is cast after cast after cast. So you're figuring 8-hour tournament. 2011, the year we won the boat, we caught 18.5 pounds in 12 minutes. Went back to that same spot on day two and caught 14.5 pounds in just under 13 minutes. So won a brand new bass boat, 20 minutes, 2 8-hour tournaments. And I mean, we loaded them up and you load them up quick. The other difference is with the smallmouth, if you take a 15-inch smallmouth compared to a 15-inch largemouth, that smallmouth is going to outweigh that largemouth tenfold. They're just full of muscle. They're so strong. They're so thick. They definitely outweigh largemouth. Very rarely, like up at Chautauqua, when I see 20-pound bags come in, 20-plus bags come in, and that's for all you guys listening and don't understand bass fishing, you get 8 hours to bring in your 5 biggest fish. You can trade big for little all day long. They call that culling, C-U-L-L-I-N-G. You can call them out all day long. You're not allowed to call out a dead fish, so that's kind of a bad thing, so you really want to keep them alive. But when you get those fish in your live well and it's early like that and they're all smallmouth, it's just unbelievable, and they just outweigh those largemouth tenfold. But anytime I've seen a 20, 21, 22, 23-pound bag weighed in, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be all smallmouth.
Yeah, they're built like tanks. They are.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. They are. They're beefy. They're sturdy. They're Hungarian. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. back to how bad they fight. We actually fished. It was back, I think, August. I think my fishing partner decided to go out the night before and maybe have one too many beers and then come home and decided that he wanted to sleep instead of get up. So I was going to fish with another guy, and I was, like, trying to find a place to park my boat, and so I was, like, didn't have it, leave it at the ramp, and actually ended up fishing it by myself, and, you know, I fish on my dad's catfish boat because I don't have a boat yet, other than my duck boat that's 16 foot long, and I ain't bass fishing out of that sucker all day long, and he's got rod racks on the back of the front deck. I mean, for catfishing, it doesn't matter, like, you can stick your rods in there. Well, I've gotten into a bad habit of sticking my rods in that, and because it's turnaround, it's easy to grab one and switch real quick. And when you go to the boat flip a fish, it's kind of in the way. Well, you know, I'm fishing a tournament by myself. It's growing. It's awful. And I'm like, man, I can't get a bite for crap. This just sucks. Well, of course, I finally hook into something. And I try to boat flip it about the same time it jumps. And it comes unhooked, bounces off the top of the live well, and out the other side of the boat.
Yep. Yeah, it happens all the time, Nate. Don't feel bad. That happens all the time. Trust me.
I ran all over the place, and I caught two with, like, 10 minutes left on a crankbait almost at the ramp. And I was like, really? I could have just come up here and caught these two and had that one and still got it almost in the money?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a game of ounces. It's a tough game, Nate. I've lost so many tournaments or been so close to the money by ounces. And, I mean, it's just a tough game. I know you mentioned a little earlier, you get – 70 boat tournament, I guarantee you 50, 60 of those guys really, really know how to fish. I mean, at the X series, which is in the lakes trails, but the X series especially, it's not cheap. You know, we put up 200, 400 a boat some tournaments. So these guys that are coming here, they're not, you know, some guys do have money and they have nice stuff and they don't know how to fish. That's just part of the game, I guess. You know what I mean? It takes money to do the bass world. But, most of these guys know how to fish, and you know, they're going to enter these big tournaments, and they're going to come out and spank you if you're not on your P's and Q's. Trust me.
Yeah, I'm trying to learn how to fish before I buy the boat, so I'm not that guy getting laughed at.
Right.
Okay, so you talked about kind of some different strategies, but a place that I'm kind of interested in is the High River. Now, you probably don't fish the High River near me. But when you do fish the High River, what are you looking for, like, structure-wise? Are you going straight for smallmouth? Because I know there's some largemouth and some spots. I don't know really what the weight is of them because I've never caught one out there. But it's somewhere that, like, I can actually get to in my tournaments and have time to fish it, and I just haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, the rivers are a whole different beast, Nate. You being from West Virginia, when we fish our tournaments at the Ohio River, we put in West Virginia down by Mountaineer Racetrack. Don't know if you're familiar with that area or not, which is up like East Liverpool, Ohio. PA's right there, right in that tri-state area is where we put in at, you know, around there. But And I'm not, you know, don't take this in a bragging way, but I am really, really good on the Ohio River. The X Series used to go there all the time. And I think the lowest I've ever finished was fifth place on the Ohio River. Most of my plaques I have in my basement are from the Ohio River. It's just a different beast when you fish the Ohio River. I 100% target smallmouth. A lot of people don't realize the Ohio River is chocked full of smallmouth bass. And it's just came a long way in the last 10, 15 years. It's a phenomenal fishery. They do have largemouth, and you are right. They are full of spotted bass. They started coming in there about 15 years ago, and we started seeing them all over the place. I even weighed in a couple before. And they're a really fun fish to catch too, but the only place I can get them is, you know, the Ohio River. But, you know, you guys, when you're targeting the Ohio River, it is current. That's what matters. A lot of guys, including my uncle and I, we will even call the lockmasters and ask them, you know, what time of the day are you drawing current? Are you guys going to be drawing current on this day or not going to be drawing current on this day? Are you got the locks closed down? Because you're allowed to lock down through if you want. It's risky. If you get, you know, if you're in a tournament and you lock down and you got to come up and there's a, you know, a barge ahead of you, they're not going to let you through that lock. They do not care if you're in a bass tournament or not. That's, you're talking, you know, work, livelihood there. They will hold you up for hours. I've seen the pros on TV get, you know, you come into these tournaments, you guys, every minute you're late is a pound off your weight. 15 minutes, you're disqualified. So being on time is everything. We try to get in a minute early if we can. But, you know, you can lock down and in. But, you know, that current is so key. When they're pulling current, and I've asked them, and they, you know, they'll gladly tell you, hey, at 12:30 to 2:30 or from 8 in the morning till 10 in the morning, we're going to be pulling current. We're going to be drawing current. And that tells me at them hours, I need to get to my rock piles. I need to get to my sweet spots, because them, when that current starts, it's like a light switch, Nate, you know, Chris, I swear to you, it's like a light switch. Those fish will turn on, they will position themselves on them rocks, and they will feed and feed and feed, especially them smallies. So when you're fishing the Ohio River, you're mostly fishing the banks. You know, it's pretty cool because you just go down the shoreline. There's nothing really offshore. You might get something 5-6 feet offshore, find a little rock pile, maybe a little sunken island, maybe some stumps or something of that nature, lay down. But mostly you're just fishing rocks, you know, up the shoreline. But some little rocks that come up the shoreline that jag out or make a small little natural point, or you'll find a little rock pile, say, or some bigger rocks that maybe want to come off that shoreline 5, 6, 10 foot from the shoreline, that's your money. Them smallmouth are going to position on that, and when you creep in on them and they're drawing current, and you throw in there where they're at, it's go time. They're going to bite. And smallmouth, when they're there, people say, oh, the smallmouth ain't biting. Bull crap. They're always biting. You just ain't, either they moved or you didn't find them. The rule of thumb of smallmouth, and what always burns you, the old saying with us smallmouth guys, here today, gone tomorrow. And that's why I said earlier, I have lost a lot of money chasing them smallmouth around. You'll get on them, and they might not pull back up on that rock pile for 2, 3, 4 days. They travel miles and miles in a night's time, in a day's time. It's unreal how they travel. And when smallies travel, the whole school goes with them. They travel in packs. That's just what they do. But yeah, that river fishing, Nate, is just, it's so current related. And when they're not drawing current, you got to slow down. You got to really slow down. Pick your same rock piles apart. They're going to be there, but they're not going to be positioned. They're just going to be cruising. They might go towards the shore, back out to the rocks, up and down, side to side, or they might just leap, go to find somewhere else. Smallmouth are so keyed on bait fish and crawdads. That's just what they do. When they're following bait fish, when the bait fish move, the smallmouth move with them. That's just what they do, you know. So the Ohio River, it's real fun. It really is. The good thing about it is, Nate, like you said, you don't need big bags. That's just not how it is. You don't get them real big bags. You got to figure, you guys, those fish are fighting current all day long, all night long. They're a lot skinnier. Even the largemouth, they don't get to lay up in the weeds and get all fat and lazy and sit there and just eat. They got to fight that current. So they're a little smaller. So if you catch like a 2.5, 3 pounder smallmouth on the Ohio River, that's a hog. You catch one that's 4 pounds, you probably got big bass. There's no doubt about it. So yeah. Kind of a little trick to the river.
Yeah, I think this year, like in that little 6 tournament series, we didn't fish one due to weather. And I think we had a 3-8 big bass on the year. And I think the biggest bag went 10 pounds, right around that. I think.
Yeah, he came up. That's
to,
a good bag on the river, 10 pounds.
Yeah, he brought in, like, I think they averaged, like, they were right around 2 pounds each. I mean, he kind of was the last guy up to the scales, and, I mean, he's a nice man. He's honestly, like, I would say he's a lot like you. He's gave me a lot of pointers and stuff, and he, like, you know how these guys are. They ain't going to tell you much. They'll just tell you a little bit. They're not as nice as catfishing guys, because catfishing guys will at least tell you everything about their bait. They just won't tell you where to go fish. Bass guys will just give you little hints. I mean, that's kind of how it is. And, I mean, I'm lucky enough to have a couple friends that are pretty good bass fishermen and stuff. And I've got one that's made the state team here in West Virginia, and he'll be at Lake Smith next year with the state team. So, you know, I've got some tips, but, I mean, it's still a lot to learn.
Yeah, and you're being awfully nice, Nate. I'm gonna joke with you here. Walleye guys will tell you exactly where to fish. Catfish guys will tell you where to fish, tell you to join them. Us bass guys, we're just gonna lie right to your face. That's just how it is. Yeah, yeah, we're catching them over here, but I'm gonna go up here, you know. So, but no, you know, most of us bass guys are pretty cool. Young kids come up to us all the time. Kids, you know, in the Kent State fishing, we back Kent State, you know, University. We back their college fishing team so much up here in Ohio. One of our tournament directors runs their club and their league and all that. So yeah, when they come picking our brains, me and my two uncles, we don't lie to those guys. Now, if we know you're in a, you know, competing against us, but most of your guys ain't good at that to compete. They're not going to come picking your brain like that. You know what I mean? But yeah, we'll give you just enough, kind of get you going. You know.
Yeah. Okay. So we've talked a little bit. We've talked about lakes. We've talked about the rivers. Chris, I think you like to fish some creeks, don't you?
I'm addicted to creeks because, you know, you catch a 2.5-3 pounder on a creek, that's a big deal. So I haven't hit one of these legendary Darby Creek 3 pounders. I hear they're out there. I know a couple of guys that have caught them. My biggest was 2 pounds, 4 ounces. But I've got a couple different strategies that I learned over the years just seasonally on creeks. And I want Mike just to kind of share some of those things he's taught me. And then, you know, some of the things that he does when he goes out, just, you know, I'm going to have some fun. I'm going to go do a quick fishing trip down at the local creek. So Mike, can you kind of give us some ideas of what you do maybe spring, summer, and then fall, you know, that could help some of our listeners just be more successful going out and doing a quick fishing trip?
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. No problem. Yeah, you guys, you know, if you want to hit up small little creeks, they're full of smallmouth bass. There's no doubt about it, and I'm sure they're full of largemouth too. Me being a tournament angler, I am. I'm always what we use the terms. I'm always running around on these big boy lakes. You know, I don't know what it is. I guess it's the challenge and the puzzle. I love to figure the fish out. That's the funnest part about bass fishing to me, is figuring them out. There's nothing better than going to bed the night before a tournament knowing, oh, my God, we're on them, and these fish are going to bite. They're going to be here in the morning, and it's just an awesome feeling. But, you know, to go out and do a little fun fishing, me and my Uncle Nick took Chris out to Lake Erie once, and that was a good learning curve, I think, for Chris. It kind of opened his eyes up to some different style of fishing and how, you know, we get after it. But you go to these little creeks, you downsize. That's the biggest thing I can say. Grab a netty rig. Grab a little, you know, a little 4-inch worm, little wacky worm, something small. If you want to use a tube, get something smaller in that 2.5, you know, 3-inch range. The fish aren't going to be quite as big as like they're going to be on these big lakes or a big pond. Like I said, where they can lay there and just get lazy and feed and get big. In the springtime, a real small little crankbait on them creeks. They work awesome. Throw a little small crankbait around. Get you a small little, even a small little spinner bait. One thing I should have told you guys too about the Ohio River and these small little creeks, to tell you the truth, a buzz bait is magic. I have caught so many fish on a buzz bait at the Ohio River and these small little creeks. It's not even funny. Now I'm talking smallies mostly, you guys, you know, but a little buzz bait, get them going. You know, they jump up, they miss that buzz bait, pitch right back in there real quick with a small little jig or something like that. You know, a small little creature bait, little zoom critter crawl, something of that nature. When you're on them creeks, though, I would seriously downsize, Chris. You know, try to keep it small. Don't overguess it. Don't think outside the box too much. Keep it simple. Little shaky head. A smaller little bandit crankbait. Smaller, you know, spinner baits, things of that nature. Target rocks. Definitely on creeks, there's, you know, creeks are always full of rocks. There's no doubt about it. Most every creek's got rock bottoms to it. Little ledges, little drop-offs. what smallmouth like to do, you guys? They like to feed real quick in the morning. That's their big gig. They like to get up and they feed. So if you can find these little creeks that's got like a drop off, fish that little shallow spot first. Rip your bait down that ledge. You know, stay in tune with your bait when you're fishing. Really pay attention to your line. You know, stare down at your line. And when that thing's starting to fall down that, you know, let that thing fall down them little ledges on slack line. When you lift up, sometimes you'll just feel weight and that's a fish on there. Or sometimes you'll just feel that bite. Usually smallmouth will hit it about 1,000 miles an hour and about jerk the rod out of your hand, you know. But as the season goes along, Chris, and that water starts to warm up, you know, those fish are going to get up in there and they're going to follow the bait fish around, the crawdads. If they're up there shallow real quick, you know, on a shad spawn, they're going to get up there and they're going to eat real quick. They're going to back off where that water is, you know, maybe not so warm where they can stay kind of acclimated, you know. But anything, you know, that's a big key when you guys are fishing creeks is to keep those baits downsized. There's no doubt.
Yeah. I think one of the tricks I learned this from Kyle. So especially for fall fishing was we would find eddies. We'd also look for, you know, just large rock piles or where there was ripples. Yep. And we'd try to stay on the back end of those ripples. And we would honestly throw jitterbugs. Small 3/8 of an ounce jitterbug right across the top. And you'd reel it as fast as you can. And that still wasn't fast enough. I mean, the fish would absolutely hammer it. And they'd miss it 3 times before they finally hit it. So yep. They would breach like great white sharks. It was amazing. It's just a fun time, but take a young kid out there and just kind of teach them that and you're going to get them hooked.
Absolutely. You know, that's something else too, Chris. You know, like you said, that's a good point, which I should have mentioned. When you see those little eddies or those water breaks or you got a rock where the backside's shallow, that's where they're going to position because they don't have to fight the current as much. And what it is, that current brings them bait fish or crawdad or whatever they're wanting to eat. They're going to come around that rock and it's going to slow up a little bit. And they're just going to sit there and just pick them off one right after another. And they don't have to work as hard to sit there in that current. Now they will sit there with their nose in that current sometimes, but if you can find that big rock where it's got a little bit of a slick or a little bit of slack water behind it, that's your gig. That's your money. Throw it up into that current, bring it back into that slack water slow and just shake it. Another good point you made too, Chris, you cannot work a bait fast enough for a smallmouth. When I'm jig fishing, people probably think, holy smokes, he's fishing way too fast. Well, they bite. Trust me. They're more sometimes mad than they are hungry. That's one thing great about the bass. They call them the king of their waters. They will react some more times than when they are hungry. You know, they just strike. But yeah, that current break, that's the key. Taking kids fishing, you guys, you know, all the listeners out there that's got some kids that want to take fishing and someone's, you know, say the dad or the uncle or the buddies in the bass, don't beat them to death with bass if it's a slow day. What you're going to do is make that kid not want to go fishing no more. Go ahead and just humble yourself and take some minnows. Take a bobber. Take, you know, hey, bass ain't biting. Let's catch bluegill. Let's catch crappie. Something they can throw in the live well, maybe take home and, you know, clean them up, eat them a little bit if they're into that. At least it keeps them interested in catching fish for a little kid. It don't matter if it's a bluegill or a 10-pound bass. It is what it is. It's just catching fish. And here in Ohio, you know, this ain't Florida. We gotta work our butts off to get 10, 11, 12 bites a day. I had a buddy of mine told me that he's from Florida. He said, if I only got 12 bites a day, I wouldn't even bass fish no more. I said, well, you're spoiled down there. You know, this is in Ohio. We got to work for what we get up here for bass fishing. You know what I mean? So, yeah, taking a little kid out, throwing on a little netty rig, something small like that. That's the coolest thing about a netty rig. A crappie will eat it. A bluegill will eat it. A largemouth will eat it. A smallmouth will eat it. A spotted bass. They'll all eat. I've caught big walleye on a net rig. I've caught muskie on a netty rig. It's crazy. It's a fish catching little bait. There's no doubt.
Yeah, no arguments there, man. No arguments. So, but Mike, let me ask you this, man. You know, we've all got those pieces of equipment. We've all got those little Piccadillys. We've got, you know, kind of the, you know, we always like the lady luck on our side. So what's that must-have item that's got to be with you in your boat? You know, if you don't have it, you just feel like you're not prepared. You know, what's that one thing you have, man?
Are we talking as far as gear, Chris, or just a lucky item?
You know, either or, brother. Either or, man.
Okay, well, my lucky item has to be Sobe Life Waters. we got to have Sobey Life Waters in the boat or we ain't catching nothing. If my uncle Dave Monner, my first partner that I started fishing with, a guy here from Lewis, so if his wife is not making Aunt Gillette's Lucky Zucchini Bread, we might as well just turn the truck around and go home if we ain't got Lucky Zucchini Bread in the boat. A bad thing to have in the boat is a banana. Banana in the boat, bad luck, either bad luck in general or bad luck for your fishing. That's just a little, I don't know if it's a wives' tale or a little pet peeve with us fishermen, but no bananas in the boat. We don't go for that. But as far as a bait, Chris, a test rig and a jig, there's no doubt about it. And that netty rig needs to be in the boat. There's no doubt about it. It'll catch fish. You know, we get in these tournaments sometimes, you guys, you fished all day long, you're chasing smallies or whatever, you've gotten four fish or something happened, you might have lost a few, you're looking just to get one more keeper. You think, man, one more 12-inch fish, we can cut a check. You know, we can make a check. That's when you start bringing out your finesse baits. But that, I'd say that netty rig, Chris, is usually on the deck 9 times out of 10. I joke with my wife, me and her call it Uncle Netty. That's my nickname. I've given it to it, and I told her a couple of years ago, I said, Nicole, I said, how many years have I been doing this, honey? I said, I started fishing you guys when I was 6 years old, strictly for bass. And I've always told, like, my dad, all my uncles, I said, if there was this one bait that always would catch fish, I said, that would be so great. Out come the netty rig. And I truly believe that that is that one bait that will always catch fish. Your Texas rig with a nice 3-aught, 4-aught hook with a creature bait, that's going to catch fish. That's the greatest thing about largemouth. They will attack or go after something 10 times their size. A smallmouth, you sort of kind of want to downsize a little bit. Some of my largemouth baits, them smallmouth will hit it, but they won't get it in their mouth, and you can't get no hook set on them. But definitely Texas rig for smallmouth, Chris. Definitely need to have a Ned rig and a drop shot. There's no doubt about it.
Good deal. Hey, I got to ask you, man. You guys went up to Chautauqua. You know, I got a history at Chautauqua. My good buddy Matt Loomis has got a lease up there. So, and I told you, you got to go get the roasted chicken. Did you and Mick go and get the roasted chicken?
So, Chris, you fished with my Uncle Mick enough to know he don't like messes, correct? Me, I tell you guys a funny story. So, like, Mick is legitimately OCD. He's one of the best. He's one of my best friends in the whole world. Like I said, my two fishing partners, I love them guys. They are family to me. But Nate, Chris knows this, but Nate, do not bring things. If you ever go fish with me and Mick, don't bring stuff that has crumbs. When you get in this boat, you got to wipe your feet off so you don't get stuff in the carpet. It's just how it is. That's just what it is with Mick, and he'll laugh about it. But here comes me and Chris with pretzel rods. And what do we have, Chris? Peanuts, I think. And we had crumbs everywhere, you know. there was no doubt about it. We had crumbs all over the stinking place. But yeah, coming in there fishing with Mick and doing all that, it's a different beast. Do you remember that day, Chris?
I know how upset he got when I told him we need to start keeping these giant walleyes, and he got all buggered up. Because they were going to make a mess of his boat. And he made me promise I would polish the boat and clean the boat when we got done. But, Nate, I'm telling you, we're hammering smallmouths. And I'm just absorbing all of this, right? And the smallies just turn off. And we'd never changed our tactics. And the walleye start hammering drop shots with gobies. And I think we had thrown back our, like, 6th or 7th one when I'm looking at these guys going, guys, I got a big fish fry coming up. I want to keep these. And Mick looks at me like I stomped on a puppy in front of him. I finally talked him into, hey, let's start keeping these, you know. And it was a major league operation getting them from the water to the live well. So, and I did. I had to polish his boat. So I had to clean his boat up for him.
And we had a – we had live wells full of walleye, though, didn't we, Chris? And he took a couple of them, too. Don't let him fool you, you know?
I think he realized that was a pretty good idea. So, plus he got his boat clean.
But getting back to when I told him how the chicken was and how you guys explained it, and when Loomis called me as well when he was explaining it, and I told Chris, and we had our ladies, you know, I had my wife with me, Chris had his girlfriend – or Mick had his girlfriend, and we were talking about this chicken, and Mick looked at me and goes, yeah, I don't think I want to get into all that. So, no, we did not get to try the dang chicken. So, but I'll try that with my other partner because he don't care.
No, he could have used the chicken grease to polish the boat, and it would have given it a shine better than anything he's buying. I mean, you can use it as bowling alley wax.
Yeah, I'm a little torn because
I'll have to do that with my Uncle Dave. He'll go up there and eat that chicken, no doubt about it. So
yeah, I'm a little torn because I'm pretty OCD myself, but like I do like to eat walleye, so that would have been a hard decision.
Yeah, Nate, I got to tell you right now, man. Matt introduced me to this chicken, and it's a riot because we're out shooting some geese, we're having a good time, and one of the guys we're with, and this is the first time I'm hunting with him on Chautauqua, and one of the guys we're with just kind of looks over at Matt and goes, what time? And Matt looks at his watch, 9 o'clock. He's like, all right, everyone give me $6. So everyone's just peeling cash up. I'm like, whatever. I flip him a 20. He's like, how many you want? I go, what? He goes, chickens. I'm like, whatever the 20 gets, man. You guys invited me. At least I can do, I'll buy you guys chickens. And Matt sends his son over to this little bodega about 2 blocks away. So, and they open exactly at 9, and the chickens are ready to go at 9. And his kid comes back, literally looks like he's carrying cordwood. So he's got like 12 chickens in his hands, you know, and he's trying, and these are full on roasted chickens. No silverware, no napkins, no nothing. We hillbillied it up, ate it with our fingers, and oh my God, it was one of the best blind meals I have ever had.
Oh, I've never ate chicken in the blind. I can honestly, I've had a sub, but it was like turkey. So I've never had a roasted chicken. So that'd be a new one for me.
It was absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's just, they put like a Cajun cayenne pepper inside the rub for it. And they do this, guys, that's the chef coming out of me. So it was a garlic herb butter they stuffed underneath the skin. Oh, I mean, it was liquid heaven. It was food heaven. That's the only way I could say it.
They must be good. That's all I've been hearing about for 2 years is these chickens. And I still haven't tried one yet. And God, I go up to Chautauqua 4 or 5 times a year. So I'm going to have to take them up on that one of these times.
I'm actually slightly heartbroken and mildly disappointed in both of you for not getting a chicken.
Well, I'll have to get him when I take Dave up there. Dave is the farthest thing from OCD. Trust me.
Well, here's a question for you, because you do a lot of tournaments, man. You've been all over this country. So, and you know, I used to do competition all the time. So I've kind of done that whole circuit as well, too, going around the country. And there are certain areas known for certain foods. You know, when I go to Southern Illinois for the Tim Ground Worlds, I got to go to the Hideaway. Absolutely fantastic joint. You know, when we're going to Chautauqua, we're going up there to grab that chicken. When we go into Having a Grace, we're going over to Stacy's. When we go up into Iowa, we got to go to Danny's. What are some of the places that that are must-haves if you're in that town?
Oh, man, Chris. It's so hard with us because you guys, you know, when we're practicing, but I'm saying when we go up to Chautauqua, you know, it's almost dark to dark. You know, I mean, we're there sole reason, and it's to fish, and it's to try to win money, and you know, we're not staying in the nicest of hotels all the time. And a lot of times it just is what it is to eat, you know. But there's a place, up there, Chris, that it's just called Bubba's. And it's just this little shack place up there in New York. It looks like they just kind of built it, but they have pretty good barbecue up there. And me and my Uncle Dave Monner, when we go up there to fish our championship in the Lakes Trails, that's definitely a must have. We go there. Lake Erie, we don't have enough time. There's all kinds of places, but I will say there's one awesome place in the Grand River called Pickle Bill's. That's probably the go-to for up around that part of Lake Erie, which would be more east side, you know, towards after Beulah, Perry Power Plant side of that nature. That's hard. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. Down at the Ohio River, there's a place right by the casino that sells pizzas. I forget the name of the place because it's always changing, but the recipe still stays the same. So a lot of times after them tournaments, we run up there and get pizzas and then get them on the way home. That's probably that's probably about it, Chris. Ben's, you've been to Ben's with us. That's a must-have, and we're at Berlin.
Yeah, no, Ben's is good. Ben's is real good.
Well, then,
that little golf course over by Milton Lake, that's another must-have when we're out. That's kind of more duck hunting.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's, you know, a lot of it, I don't know, I guess a lot of that's, you kind of stumped me on that question a little bit, Chris. I guess because we're fishing so much, by the time we're done, we're looking to eat anything, and usually it's eating and go right to bed, you know, have maybe a beer or two, then off to bed we go, and back up, we're having at it, you know, so.
Then what's the go-to fast food? You know, I mean, us as duck hunters, like West Virginia, we're getting Tooters. If it's morning, we're getting Tooters if they're open.
There's no argument there. There's none. There is Tooters just taking the breakfast sandwich to an elite level that other fast food joints will never touch. Wendy's with their breakfast baconator has made a solid attempt, but still, you know, like the Herd and the Mary B over at Tooters, they're just absolutely ridiculous. Mikey, they're about the size of your head. I got to take you down to the lease this year, man. We're going to have a good time. You'll be with Nate, but I'm going to tell you, we'll take you to Tudor's Biscuit World. And these sandwiches are the size of your head.
Me and Nicole's had them. So my family's all from the mountains of North Carolina. We go down there every year for a reunion. And we drive right through West Virginia, and we've stopped at Tudor's. I've had it, and I know exactly what you guys mean. Their biscuits are the best. I think the only other biscuit I've had was my grandma Wilcox from the mountains of North Carolina making a pan of cat heads real quick that were just made from scratch. Unbelievable. You'd have loved them, Chris, you know, being a chef. Cracker Barrel's got good biscuits, but I don't think they're quite as good as Tudor's. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, man, Tudor's is pretty good. Now there is a place, it's in Charleston, it's Susie's Biscuits, that I know Chris has never had it. I don't know if they're like, unless you work like up there in that area, I don't know if you ever had it, but I'll have to maybe drive up here sometime, get one, and drive as fast as I can out to Ohio, and we'll go do some bass fishing.
Oh, hey, Nate, you're more than welcome to come fishing with me anytime, Nate. Absolutely. I'd love to show you some things, and I love getting kids involved. You know, any of our listeners out there, you guys want to reach out to me, reach out to Chris through KES's webpage or whatnot, reach out to Nate, pick my brain some more, shoot me some emails. It's not a problem. I will talk bass fishing until I'm blue in the face. I will talk duck hunting right with you as well. But I love taking kids fishing, getting involved. I can explain to people how to get involved in your local tournaments, local clubs, things of that nature. I will say one thing to try to have fun with it. I know one year I was beating myself to death with tournaments. You guys, I was getting really frustrated. We was having a kind of a bad year, and I was practicing hard. And just, in one of them years, you know, it's a tough game we play. And sometimes it's just, it is what it is. I was, you know, I took a big learning curve, and I was so frustrated. And I went back and I was venting to my uncle, Dave Monner, and we lived 3 minutes apart from each other. My boat used to sit in his garage. So our bass boats used to sit side by side in a 30-by-60 garage, and it was sweet. And then I ended up getting my boat here, but I was grumbling to him one day and kind of probably, you know, he's probably, not I want to say getting annoyed, but I was, you know, pretty upset. And he looked at me, he said, you know, buddy, he said, we do this for fun. He said, this is supposed to be fun. He said, I'm here to compete as much as you are. And I want to win every tournament too. He said, but if it's going to make you acting like the way you're acting right now, you need to get out of fishing bass tournaments or sell your boat and just get out of it in all general. And he put it to me just like that. And that's how my Uncle Dave Monner is. He'll tell you like it is when it comes to fishing, and it is what it is. Either you find them or you don't find them. You catch them or you don't catch them. Sometimes you lose them. I used to get all upset and get all worked up over that. Of course you don't want to lose them, but that's part of the game, you guys, you know. It's a really tough game, but I would love to, you know, kids or anybody getting frustrated or would love to pick my brain more or, you know, want to talk bass fishing or get involved more, you know, any listeners, just, you know, hit us up, reach out to us. We're more than happy to talk duck hunting or bass fishing with you.
Yeah.
That's good.
Something to say with that, like real quick, Chris, not to cut you off, but like, I know where you're coming from there. Cause like, I'm very competitive. And I know you are just about how passionate you are about this. And I know Chris is competitive too. I mean, he'd done the call and stuff, the competitions. And it's hard when you're competitive and then you still got to realize at the end of the day, this is not your paycheck that's making your way right now. I mean, we've all got our jobs that we're actually working 9 to 5 or 6 to 2 or whatever. and that's our real jobs. But I mean, it's hard at the end of the day when you want to succeed so bad at that.
Nate, there is no doubt. There was one point in time, I mean, my poor wife, I've been with my wife for 20 some years, and she is my best friend. And Chris, she's good friends with Chris and his wife, Chris, and all that. You know, Chris knows my wife, and she's been with me through the good and the bad. You know, the day I called her that I won that boat, we had just bought this house. We had credit card debt, and we were just, you know, it was, like I said, 2011, and it was, you know, she cried. She started crying on the phone. Oh, my God, I can't believe it. I said, Nicole, I said, we're going to, you know, we can to pay off all that debt. Winning a boat by fishing was a great feeling, you know, you guys. And the next year, coming in second, paying off all the new windows we put in the house just by fishing. But at the end of the day, you know, she's seen some bad times with me, too, where she's been like, just like you said, Nate, she's like, you know, Mike, I get it. She knows I'm competitive. I told her one day, Nate, I said, I want to succeed at this as bad as I want to breathe every day. My dream for years, I was not having it. I was going to be a pro bass angler. And then, you know, I was getting frustrated with that. And my Uncle Dave had to put that in perspective with me, too. He's like, you know, buddy, you ain't got enough money. He said, you ain't got the resume right at the moment to get these big sponsors. He's like, you know, you need $30,000, $40,000 to even think about trying to fish for a living. And, you know, Nate, to try to be a pro bass fisherman and to put your money up like that, if you want to go broke real quick, give that a try once. Because I'm going to tell you what, as good as all of us anglers are at the level I'm at, the guys on TV, it's unbelievable how they can catch them and find them. It's unreal, you know. But I wanted, like you said, I'm such a competitor, Nate. I want to win every tournament as bad as I want to breathe every day, you know. But it's just, that's just the reality of it, you know what I mean?
You know, you guys both bring up very valid points. And it's something I learned early on the competition circuit. And people mistake cocky and confident all the time. So the difference between the two is the confident has been humbled. And they know what it's like 100%. To lose. They know what it's like to grind. They know what it's like to put that work in order to win. So, and everything we've just talked about, it's a humbling experience. It truly is. And your uncle's 100% right, man. It's supposed to be fun. If you're going to do it for a living, you got to enjoy doing it.
Absolutely.
No, you're gonna be.
And you, I mean, it just takes a lot. You got to build a resume. I mean, you know, you got to, you know, you think you got to go up to a guy, say, that owns so and so company, and you got to ask a guy for $30,000-$40,000 to sponsor you, wrap your truck, wrap your boat, the fuel, the hotels. You know, when you're fishing at a pro level, especially the BASS Elite Series of the FLW Tour, you know, you're traveling the country, California, Florida, Texas, the Great Lakes. I mean, you're traveling hard, and I mean, that's, you're away from your friends, you're away from your family, the hotels, crappy food, and, you know, and to win one tournament, then you've made it, then the sponsors come after you. But to get to that level, it's really, really hard, you guys, and you need money to back, you know, back yourself up. I remember the first time, you know, my uncle, we kind of joke, I still laugh about this every time, even me and my wife will laugh. I'm like, Uncle Dave, I'm going to do this for a living, and I'm going to be a pro bass fisherman. He said, boy, you ain't got enough money. That's all he said to me, and he turned his head and went right back to fishing. He never said another word to me, and I thought, what the hell? You know? But 10 years later from that day, he was damn right. You know what I mean? I didn't have enough money to get to that level and to give it a try. Is that still my dream someday, you guys? Absolutely. But, you know, maybe someday I'll catch a break and get to that point in life where I can maybe give it a try, you know, at a elite level and see how it goes. But those guys are really good. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I've kind of come obsessed with, like, looking in the bass fishing and everything about it and watching, like, how the different series and stuff, like, just play out. Just, like, and, I mean, I'm a big thing of watching, like, YouTube and stuff because, I mean, that's my generation.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we watch the guys like Jacob Wheeler and Dustin Cannell and Mark Daniels Jr. and those guys, like, I don't know when the last time I seen Mark Daniels really win, but I mean, he just has fun, but he's got that backing to be there. And now he's got with the social media aspect, he's making money that way. That's covering that money he doesn't have. But I think something you brought it up and I don't think you realize, and I don't think a lot of people realize that they want to go fish those big tournaments, but man, don't write off those tournament series right there in your state. I mean, I know, the High River Trails just paid out $25,000 to first place. You know, I mean, that was 2-day fishing. You had to fish a series, yep. but someone walked away with a team walked away with $25,000. I mean, you take taxes off that, you just won $17,000 together.
Sure.
I mean, that
in a weekend.
Yeah, that's a pretty good check. And I mean, anymore with the Bass Opens and stuff, with the Bass Elite Series to make the things and stuff, like what I'm seeing and like watching of that, like even the really professional guys, they're struggling because you got to go against 200 and some competitors. And 70 of them
and
are
on
their home
50.
Lake. Yeah, and 70 of them yep. are on their home lake. I mean, you put...
Absolutely.
I mean, let's put you on your best lake and then put a bunch of people against you. You're going to beat a lot of them.
And then, oh, there's no doubt. You know, bring all those pros up to Mosquito Lake up here with us, Nate. I bet you I whoop almost all of them.
Yeah, I mean, that's
but
just...
that's my lake. Yeah, take me out to Okeechobee against those pros, I'm going to look like a moron. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
there's no doubt.
There's a solid 10, 15 that are going to figure it out, and they're going to do it. I mean, it's proved in that
yep.
MLF format where they weigh every fish. It's just flat out proved. Some guys know how to catch a bunch of them, and some guys don't have an idea how to catch a bunch of them.
It is, and Nate, that's a great point. You know, even like in the X Series, for example, or the Lakes Trails, you know, a lot of us guys all fish the same trails, but, you know, it's them select five or six that's always taking checks, and it's an understanding of, you know, how the old saying is, you want to catch the owl, study the mouse. Well, that's something that a lot of bass, you know, some our listeners out there that are new to this, or these young kids that are listening to this podcast, that's a little tip I'd like to give you guys. You want to learn how to catch more fish or learn, you know, a bass's lifestyle, or, you know, how does he know where to go right away? How does he know what depth to get them fish in? You guys, you got to learn when a shad spawn happens, when crawdads do their thing, when they move, where they're at, where the depth is. That's, you know, a bass is on their mind all the time is food and spawn. So there, you know, that the old saying goes, you want to catch the owl, study the mouse. You want to catch the bass, study the shad, study the bluegill spawn, study the crawdad. Find out their life cycles. Find out a bass's life cycle. Where does a bass like to go in these months when the water's this, when the temperature's that? Where are they normally at? Where are they, you know, where do you want to look for? And then, you know, another thing I could give, another good tip I could give you, you know, you guys or all of our listeners out there, if you're going to hit these bigger lakes, get yourself a nice map. Like, go get you a good hot, you know, hot maps and you know, buy one. Order them off the internet. Get a good detailed map. That's going to give you ledges, going to give you true contour lines. Some of them will give you structure. And, you know, like you said, Nate, the internet is a great tool. And these younger kids that are coming up to these series with these electronics and what they have at their exposure, it's tough to beat these young kids. There's a lot of younger kids. Take, for instance, there's a guy that fishes with us, Chris, you met him that day out there, Richie Glavick. He was out there sharing water with us at Lake Erie that day. That kid can flat out get it done. There is no doubt about it. He's not young kid no more. I shouldn't call him a kid. He's a young man now, but he can get it done. And when he first come on the scene, he was young, and we're like, man, who is this kid? He reads electronics. Nick, my uncle Nick, my partner in the X-Series, fishes with Richie all the time, and he's like, Michael, he reads electronics like you read a book. He's like, he is so good with them electronics, you don't even understand what he's seeing and what he's doing and where he knows where to throw, where they're positioned. I mean, they really dial them down. The YouTube, Nate, like you said, YouTube and, oh, just all the different Google Maps. People don't realize you can go to certain lakes and look at Google Maps. And if it's a time of the year when they got that map on the internet, say, for instance, one of my favorite lakes here and around the area is Mosquito Lake and Berlin Lake. If you find Google Maps when that lake is drawn down, it'll show you stumps, rock piles. It'll show you the laydowns. And people don't realize this. You can get the GPS coordinates off of that, your laptop, your computer, and you can put your chip in off of your unit from your boat into your computer and transfer those waypoints from your laptop to your chip, to your Garmin, or to your Hummingbird. And that's no lie. And that's what some of these guys are doing. And I don't have the time or know all the knowledge to do that, but that's what these people are doing. And they're not messing around. Some of these guys, you know, me and Chris, we're out all winter long. You too, Nate, we're chasing ducks around, geese around. These hardcore bass anglers, when the lakes are down, they're walking around lakes with a handheld GPS in their hand, and they're waypointing rock piles that they're walking around and finding, creek channels, Christmas trees that the Boy Scouts are throwing in the lake. When all them lakes are drained, I'm telling you, bass guys will go out and they will do stuff like that. And then they come back in the season and they fish all that stuff and they find out which ones are holding fish and which ones are ain't. And then they label them right on their GPS. That's another good tip I could give the listeners when, you know, when they're coming up or you tuning in. As you go along, anytime you start waypointing stuff, take the time to label it. That's something I wish I would have done when I was younger. My Uncle Mick's really beat that in my head. You find a rock pile, well, we find something on the side image on our hummingbirds. You know, you can go over a score right on top of that. He finds the high spot on that rock pile, and he waypoints it. And he'll label it, rock pile, you know, lay down, stump, foundation, this, that, whatever, solo rock. He might even put a rock. My Uncle Mick has waypoints that says, sit boat here, cast to the right 10 feet. I mean, that's how sick he is with labeling up his stuff. I got on Mosquito Lake, I got 300 waypoints, Nate, and I can't tell you what half of them even are. They just are numbers. And I didn't take the time when I was younger to label them all down. So some of my waypoints suck and some of them don't. And sometimes I don't know which is which. You know what I mean? There's just so many. But that's what these younger guys and this new generation is doing with electronics on all this internet at their exposure. I mean, it's unreal what they can do, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a big thing. And I think Chris can probably talk on this like I can, bringing this back full circle to talking about duck hunting and stuff. I mean, that's what me and Chris mainly do, is taking notes about the weather, where ducks are setting, where they want to be, when the water level's at this level, where can I get my boat to? What's flooding?
Absolutely.
I mean, Chris.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of pressure systems. Pay close attention to the precipitation in the air. So I've started noticing patterns with drier air. So, but I have, and Mikey, you've seen them. So, but I have journals. Oh. I have journals that go back all the way to 1997. So,
absolutely.
You know, it tracks weather. It tracks, you know, what guys went out hunting, where did we go, what was the temperature, what was the barometric pressure, what was the wind doing that day, when, how many birds did we take, you know, and you can really dial into some research. And there's times where we've seen birds in a field and I'm looking at old journals going, man, I think they're going to sit the next day. So based off what the weather was doing, and guess what? They sat. So you can learn a lot of information just going back and doing your research. And I think Mikey hit the nail on the head. I think that's what the young generation of bass fishermen are doing now. And they're elevating the game of the guys that are the veterans. They're
absolutely
forcing them, you know, to really put that research in. And, you know, it's no different than what you and I are doing, Nate. You know, paying attention to, you know, sunny days, I make it a rule I'm going to try to hit the water, but I'm paying attention to a lot of different aspects. You know, them cloudy, rainy days or them snowy days, I'm trying to hit fields. So, but there's days where it's just super sunny, super cold, and I'm not even going out. I'm not even thinking about going out until noon, and I'm going to go hit a field.
Sure.
So, and I remember the first time I did that with some friends, and they thought I was crazy. So, and we passed the guys going into this field that had hunted in the morning. I mean, and these guys were blue and cold and miserable and said, you ain't going to kill nothing. And we weren't even done setting up the decoys and birds were piling in.
Yep.
They were just sitting on that water. They were keeping that water warm. They were warming themselves up. They were trying to keep that water open. They're sunning themselves. And, man, I think our hunt was over in an hour.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Chris, that's a great point. Nate, too, you know, you being in the waterfowl, you know, you guys, Chris knows this, I've been waterfowl hunting. This will be my 22nd year of waterfowl hunting. As far as bass fishing, I'll be 43 this year. I started when I was 6 years old. Totally different game. When I'm out, that's something else, you know, something good for our listeners, too, to realize when you're going out or when you're young or when you're learning a new sport or new game. I feel quite a bit about waterfowl hunting. Me and Chris have a really good mutual friend here in my hometown, Gene Greminger. another KS waterfowl pro staff. But when Chris and Gene talk, I shut my mouth and I listen. Those boys know what they're talking about, and that's something I can, you know, give out to our listeners. Don't. It's good to know stuff, and it's good to throw out your 2 cents worth, but throw it out into a 2 cents worth where maybe it's like coming out like as a question. Chris and Gene get to talking, and they talk all these notes and patterns and what's going on with the weather up in Canada and this and that and whatnot or whatever. Nate, I've learned more about waterfowl hunting in these last 3 or 4 years with Chris. You know, I got to meet Chris because of Gene, but I learned a lot being with Gene. Now with Chris, it's really elevated my game, and how they look at things is different. And Chris is not lying. I was on one of those hunts, so we are like setting up decoys at noon, and birds are just screaming to us, and people are like, "You ain't killing nothing that day." Well, we torched them, and that there's no doubt about it. And I've been on some good hunts because of these boys. Same deal with bass fishing. Chris come out bass fishing with me and Nick up at Lake Erie. I noticed real quick, and I kept looking back. I'm like, "Everything good, Chris?" He's like, "Mikey, everything's great. I'm enjoying myself. It's great weather." He said, "I'm just listening to what you guys are saying." And we were talking smallmouth fishing, and Chris was soaking it up like a sponge, and I really had no clue. I just thought he's just back here having a good time. But no, he was paying attention, you know.
Yeah, that's it. I was just legitimately just listening to 2 smallmouth gurus, you know, trade tips, trade stories. Hey, try this real quick. Hey, switch to this. So, and I'm just observing. Yep. And, you know, that's at that point, I mean, you're getting a master's degree right here from watching these 2 guys just hammer them. And these guys are hitting, you know, 5 and 6 pound smallmouths. So one after the other, after the other, after the other. So, and it's the subtle little things that attention to detail, that laser-like focus they have. So, and that's all the important stuff, all those little intangibles. So it isn't just popping something in the water and hoping for the best. These guys put a lot of time and a lot of effort in what they're doing. So I was going to do everything I could to soak up as much as I can. So yeah, we got a contest coming Chris. Up too, don't we, Mikey?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll still buy dinner no matter what. I can almost guarantee you I know what the results are going to be, but we'll still buy dinner. Don't worry about it, Chris.
Nate, I might have bit off more than I could chew, but I was with Kyle.
It's going to be fun.
In his new boat. And
that's all right. Kyle can come out and waypoint some spots.
Yeah, and that's really the thing, because Kyle sold his old boat, and he forgot to take the chip out. So Kyle's got great spots on Lake Erie. So, and he hits me with he's like, "Hey, you want to do like a little fishing tournament with Mick and Mikey? And I can get some new waypoints and kind of share some of my waypoints." And I'm like, "Well, I can throw it past them." So, yeah. Of course, you know, Mikey and Mick being a competitor, they're like, "All right, game on, big boy." So, and the winner enjoys dinner by the losers. So.
We'll buy dinner.
That's pretty awesome, guys. You know, I think we've kind of summed up a lot of stuff. And Mikey, it's been awesome talking to you and stuff, but we're going on about an hour and 18 minutes now. And, you know, I think we got to get you back on here sometime. Maybe let's talk maybe in the spring or something, see how you're doing, like with spring fishing, you know. Maybe I talk Chris and get me up there, and we all go on a fishing trip and sit down together, you know, BS in a room.
Oh, yeah, and Nate, please come up and hunt with us too. Man, we got into them pretty good opening day up here just this past Saturday. Sunday wasn't the best of days, but Saturday we had a nice mixed bag. Got into some good woodies, some nice mallards, and some geese. Chris, you've been to the spot where we went, and you've been there plenty, and you know it's a good spot. And we're going to get into them again one more time before the break goes out. You know what I mean? But, yeah, Nate, please, come up and hunt with us, man. And the fishing thing? Nate, that's nothing. We got you. Just bring snacks and drinks. Each one of our boats has 15, 20 rods in it, more tackle than you can shake a stick at. Just come up and enjoy yourself, and we would love to teach you some things on bass fishing, brother. No doubt about it.
Yeah, man, that sounds awesome.
Nate, just make sure you bring your own tackle box.
You mean a tackle box is empty to take stuff home in? Okay, I can do that. Do I get to pick out a rod or two?
We'll give you some stuff to take home.
Hey, man. Mike, once again, man, this was awesome having you on here. Chris, I can't thank you enough. I mean, this is your podcast, but you got a chance for me to sit down and talk to a guy who literally knows his stuff talking fishing, and this was awesome. I mean, I've taken all kinds of notes. This has just been a fun podcast. I mean, I've sat here and drank, you know, four fingers of Evan Williams, and this has been the greatest night of my life so far on this.
That's awesome. I'm glad to hear that. Maybe, hey, we're just getting started, Nate. We ain't even we're just scratching the surface, brother.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. And Nate, we're gonna have fun with this, man. We said we weren't just gonna do waterfowl. We're gonna encompass all aspects of the outdoor world. So I'm gonna get my good buddy Kyle Floyd on. I'm gonna get Mikey back on. I got Gene Greminger. I got Steve Bosselman. I got my good friend Dougie Fresh. So we're gonna have some fun talking and trying to just, you know, spread a wealth of knowledge out there. So,
but absolutely,
I'm just putting it on, man. It's the least we can do.
Yeah, man, this has just been awesome. Once again, everyone out there, you know, you can find us on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts and on Anchor. You know, we're Red Lake Talk. Check us out sometime, and we'll see you next time.